It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Conor McGregor was an exciting fighter, and left-handers are always a lot of fun to watch, but the truth is most people didn't know Conor until he got on the mic. And make no bones about it, the guy's a goddamn superstar in front of the camera. He could be the funniest prize fighter of all time, particularly if you take his accent into account, and he's kind of got to be the funniest fighter of the modern era. He's got that thing where he's so good at talking shit that you kind of just start to believe what the guy's saying. McGregor started fighting professionally in 2008, came to the UFC in 2013, but after a couple years in the show, Conor didn't really have his marquee breakout win. He beat Max Holloway, but Max was a baby at the time. He was a year off being the youngest fighter in the UFC stable. The Chad Mendes fight was Conor's coming out party, but even then, Chad took the fight on short notice. Conor became a star on the UFC's Ultimate Fighter, but again, it's just because he's so good at making content. But then, in December of 2015, Dana White announced Conor McGregor would headline UFC 194 in Las Vegas, Nevada, and fight none other than, just perhaps the pound-for-pound best fighter in UFC history at the time, Mr. I Haven't Lost in 10 Years, Jose Aldo. That's what the UFC does. They make the fights people want to see. So what will happen in this fight? Will Brazil's legendary champion finally shut Ireland's big mouth? Or will that big mouth bark even louder? Because that's what's at stake here. Conor McGregor in this fight is either exposed as a fraud, he's exposed for being all talk, or he's suddenly in contention for being included in the rarest, most exclusive group of elite athletes to ever walk this planet. The people who are not just the best of the best, they're also the most entertaining. And it only took 13 seconds to find out. This is First Ballot. Welcome to First Ballot, the podcast that celebrates the moments in sports that really matter and decides whether they're good enough for the First Ballot Hall of Fame. I'm your host, Neil, a.k.a. Gotham Coach, the long-lost Gasol brother, the podcast Jordan Clarkson, half Jolly B, half Omri Caspi. I'm not the biggest Lakers fan. I'm the best Lakers fan. Mr. Not Always Right, but Mr. Never Wrong. Coming to you live from the First Ballot Hall of Fame home office at my Shaquille O'Neal Office Depot, big and tall. Executive suite desk chair, top grain black leather. It's fantastic. The First Ballot Hall of Fame podcast is brought to you by the Ball is Life Podcast Network. You know what it is. We're building slowly but surely. The show keeps growing. Today's episode of the show could be sponsored by Jollibee. The last time I recorded a prize fighting episode with Rafe Bartholomew, I had not tried Jollibee. I have since been to the Philippines, Mr. Big Time here. I absolutely loved it, and I ate way too much Jollibee. It's absurd that I would go to another country and then eat a bunch of fast food I can get in fucking Times Square. Guess who I haven't introduced yet. Have you had Jollibee before?
I have not, but I heard that episode,
that's racist. Great. I do think that's racist that you haven't tried it yet. Listen, it's not a big deal.
Well, I have a black liver from eating too much fast food throughout my life, so that's not racist at all. I'll tell you that much.
I have the friend that I had some Jollibee with said to me that Jollibee spices their chicken like they got something to prove. I think that's a great sentence. I'm going to leave it right there. Jollibee, it was a chicken heavy trip. I'm willing to try everything else on the menu. I did have some sort of delicious ice cream dessert thing with like It had like croutons on it. I found it to be delicious. The ice cream I thought was a good quality. Whatever the sauce was, I thought was tasty. It wasn't too sweet. And the croutons, nice texture change. I'm not certain they were croutons, but I won't research this. Jollibee, if you want to pay, I'll research. No money, I'll say whatever I want. That's how it works. Conor McGregor's knockout of Jose Aldo at UFC 194 is one of the great moments in mixed martial arts history and in sports in general. But is it a First Belt Hall of Famer? It's only the best here in the First Belt Hall of Fame. We have to decide if this moment is good enough. And to do that, we'll have to go through our First Belt Hall of Fame credentials, and we'll go through them with our episode guest today. Now, Rafe Bartholomew, who I've already mentioned, messaged me, said, "You gotta have my guy on the show. Every time I listen to your show, I wonder, what would my guy say on the show? You got to have him on." I listened to Rafe through and through. Thank you for the recommendation. Booked him immediately. I'm so excited to meet this guy and get to know him with all of you listening. He's a writer at CBS Sports, an analyst at Showtime Sports. He's been a color commentator at NBC and DAZN. He spent a decade plus at ESPN in Grantland. He's one of the co-hosts of the very successful, very entertaining Morning Combat podcast. It's Mr. Brian Campbell.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Or as we like to call it, the award-winning Morning Combat. I never have to explain who sent the award or what it was for, but forever, it's the award-winning.
Brian, set the table for us right out of the gate. What's your favorite sport, your favorite team, and your favorite athlete of all time?
Okay, my favorite sport is boxing. It is what got me into the combat space, along with pro wrestling and the Rocky movies, which is just a natural combustible connection there of what happened right there.
Can I jump in and ask you a question?
Sure.
If boxing is a 10, you love boxing. Yes. Boxing is a 10. Where is MMA?
MMA is about an 8.5. I'd put boxing at 10, basketball at 9, and MMA right behind that.
Fascinating. Got it. That's fantastic. Okay, so what's your favorite team of all time? Since you're a boxing fan, I guess you could say, listen, it's your question.
Yeah,
what's your favorite team?
Although I don't follow them anymore, the New York Mets are the team that I've cared about the most. The team that I had, you know, spent hundreds of dollars on scalp tickets to watch them, you know, advance in the playoffs while drinking too much and getting, peppered with trash from my own fans for being too drunk and obnoxious. That's my team, the New York Mets.
Now I know a lot about you. You just saying that, you saying that the Mets are your team. Now everybody knows a little bit about Brian Campbell. And who's your favorite athlete of all time?
I don't know if this is weird or not, but it's Larry Bird. I mean, I grew up in Connecticut.
This is the most insane grouping of answers for this question. You have gone all over the board. I mean, I think it's lovely that you're saying this without thinking twice about how insane your answers are. I appreciate it. I think it's lovely that you're doing it. Please, I'm sorry I cut you off now twice. Explain to me why you love Larry Bird.
I grew up in Connecticut, which is obviously not far from Boston. But in the 80s, yeah. I spent a lot of time at my grandmother's house. She was a monster sports fan, New York Mets fan, Boston Celtics fan. And she had a rule. If Larry Bird's on, you can't watch cartoons in the upstairs living room. Yeah. So I ended up coming of age. You know, the Celtics were in the NBA Finals in 84, 85, 86. And while I certainly wasn't a game-to-game, day-to-day fan, I came of age as Larry Bird is the Messiah within that sport. And I certainly, while I can't shoot a lick, yet still play basketball even today at age 45, I certainly have modeled Larry's ability to, you know, dive for loose balls and act like I'm the hardest worker on the floor at all times.
Yeah, I hear you. Larry Bird, I hate Larry Bird and the Celtics. I want to be clear about that. Everybody knows that I'm the best Lakers fan in the world. Everybody knows that. That's my reputation precedes me. Larry Bird is one of the few guys that I literally hated. I loathed as a kid, but that as I grew up, I learned to appreciate him. He might be the reason that I can do that with anyone in general, that I can sort of get over things and just go, well, you know, it is amazing the way he played and how he played and how funny he was and all of those things. So much respect to Larry Bird.
He
do
produced,
hate him, and I wish he never.
So my years of like really loving Larry Bird were his old years, right? Post 89 yes. heel surgery. Yes. So he produced what is my favorite trope in all of sports. And when it happens in the fight game where I work, I get so excited. The old guy, if you remember Larry Bird in the 91 and 92 seasons, barely able to make it on the court. He'd play 5 minutes. Yeah. He'd lay on his stomach and have back right. contractions. But every yes. couple games, he could remind you, yeah. I mean, dropping 40-something on the Trailblazers that time and hitting that crazy three-pointer to tie. I mean, he could do things that are just ridiculous. And I cling to that trope today, even watching. Like, we always yeah. think every fighter's got one more fight, one more right. big performance in them.
Yes.
There's something about somebody who there used is. To have it. They don't have it anymore. Yes. But every once in a while, I try to live my life like that, right? You know, I fail yeah, most I of the you. Time, but every once in a while.
That's the truth, man. And there's something warm and lovely about seeing just a flash of it. You're like, oh, there he is. That's the guy I know. Oh, my God. That was just like this moment. Yes, you're 100% right. So wait, hold on very quickly before we move on. Why do you love boxing so much more and so much? One and a half points on our unofficial scale here. Why is boxing in 10? Why is MMA in 8? Why is MMA not higher? Because I'll be honest, I grew up loving boxing, but if you said to me you get to watch one, maybe I'd watch boxing still, but it's pretty close. It depending, I guess it would depend on who was fighting. I wouldn't always just choose the boxing match if the right guys or if the wrong guys are boxing. I might choose the MMA. Why is there a gap between those two for you?
Well, boxing was my first love. Yeah. I got into it. Like, my dad was monster into the Rocky movies. So I'm watching Rocky 1 and 2 and 3 in the buildup to go into the theater to see Rocky 4.
Yeah.
At that same time, you have to remember, I get MTV when we bought a house May 1st, 1984. I'm 5 years old. I turned that thing on and didn't turn it off for like 3 years. And my parents were just like, yeah, sure, go ahead, watch it. Suddenly it's the Rock and Wrestling Connection and the WWF yes. is on there with Hulk yes. Hogan. Then Hulk Hogan is showing up on the A-Team. And then simultaneously, my dad, never a sports fan, except for Mike Tyson's post-jail yes. run when we had the illegal yes. pay-per-view box. My mom's father, my grandfather, never a sports fan, except for when I was a kid. I couldn't watch TV if boxing was on. We had to sit on the floor. So I sat on the yeah. floor with my dad and grandfather, watch Mike Tyson's first yes. fight on HBO, watch Evander yes. Holyfield's first fight. So to answer your question, though, my buddy, one of my best friends in the business, John Anik, he's the voice of the UFC, used to work with him for years at ESPN. He'll echo this. He always says this, and it's true. Day to day, week to week, MMA, and when we're talking about MMA, we're talking about the UFC. It kicks boxing's ass day to yes. day, week to week.
Yes.
It gives you what you want. The best fight, the best. It's exciting. Yes. It's edgy. It's everything. But when boxing is great,
yeah.
which is once a year, twice yeah. a year, yeah. once every 5 years, depending on your tolerance level, yeah. it's the greatest thing in sports. It's a reflection of life. It's gross and gnarly and behind the times in terms of PC ways, but it is just classic. And there's just something yeah. connected going back to growing up in a tough town in suburban Connecticut, but a tough factory town, not being able to fight, looking at all the kids that could fight as my idols, and mystery matchmaking. Imagine if that kid fought that kid. It's still the same way today in boxing. Imagine if that guy moved up in weight and fought that guy. There's something about the pure element of two men really settling it shirtless and finding out in that moment who's tougher that I still yearn for.
I can't disagree with anything you just said. And it's the same thing. And I don't know that anyone's ever answered that question. Like, why do you love boxing? And not said, oh, my old man. Like, it's always the old yeah. man. That's where it always comes from. Same thing. I remember sitting in my dad's office and he's in the chair behind me. And those Tyson fights on HBO, man, just to see my father get excited. My father would have made a great dictator. He never spoke to anybody. He had his hands behind his back, constantly judging everyone in his surroundings. But to watch him watch Tyson on that HBO run and to see him get excited, man, that was so much fun. And it just put boxing in my heart forever. And I understand all the issues with it, but I'll never be able to leave it ever.
You obviously remember when Tyson bit Holyfield's ear yes, during his post-jail Showtime run.
Yes.
My dad standing up in front of the TV screamed the F word like 57 straight times and said, Mike Tyson needs to be arrested. He needs to be deported. He needs to be put away. Like, these are the moments that you're like, oh my God, Dad, you're losing your mind over this. Like, relax here a little bit. You know, like, yeah, those are the moments, man. Those are the moments. And one more thing about my dad. Again, never a sports fan. Used to buy me the WrestleManias. But when Sugar Ray Leonard fought Marvin Hagler in 1987, we had a pay-per-view party at our house. That means that fight had to get to a level that even this non-sports fan at work hearing the right. guys talk about it had to be like, I'm sorry, I need to yeah. see this thing. You know, okay. that's boxing, though.
Before we move on, I have two questions for you. One, three questions. I added one. Number one, who's your favorite fighter, boxer? Two, do you have a favorite fight three, and it can be, this can be one of the answers that you've just said. If you had, I asked you to come on and talk about McGregor Aldo. I asked you to do that. If you have full production control of the First Ballot podcast, Hall of Fame podcast, and you can talk about any other boxing moment, what boxing moment are you choosing?
Wow. If I'm going to any boxing moment, I'm going to May 7th, 2005. You ever heard of this little piece of business called Corrales Castillo 1?
Oh, my God.
Lightweight title unification, which aired on Showtime. It's not hyperbole to say that's the greatest fight in the history of boxing. It's a 10-and-a-half-round movie. It is a, you know, it's just one of those things that, like, it's actually not my favorite fight. It's my second favorite fight. But it is the most epic piece of business I've ever seen.
I want to tell you, I'm completely crestfallen. It is a mistake that I had you come on and talk about McGregor Aldo. We should have done that fight.
I love McGregor Aldo, believe me.
No, it's great. And this is going to be a good episode. I'm not going to ruin this. I'm going to make sure that it's good. But that fight's so good. This is my pitch. Me, you, and Rafe get together and do that fight.
Heck yeah.
Okay.
Heck yeah.
All right.
To answer your questions quickly, my favorite fight of all time, you remember a couple of years earlier, 2002, the Mickey Ward, Arturo Gatti trilogy.
Wait, which one? Yes.
The first one.
Yes.
Even though it's not as good of a fight start to finish as Corrales Castillo, there is an emotional connection with the care. I always say this. There's great action fights, but a great action fight could mean different things.
Yes.
Sometimes it's just two guys running into each other 100 times until one falls.
Right.
I like action fights that have character, that have overcoming. Mm-hmm. This isn't boxing anymore, right? It's like this is real life happening, playing out a mirror in front of you. It's the most. That's why boxing is the best sport, because the stakes are higher than in any other sport because you can literally die there, and people that's do right. every single year. But above that, you have an opportunity to show more character within a sporting event than any other sport, bar none, right?
I couldn't agree with you more. When you bring up those two fights, it makes me go, there are sports fans. There's like a fucking 40-year-old sports fan. Like, I'm not even talking about a kid. There's like a 40-year-old sports fan, loves sports, loves the NFL, loves basketball, watch baseball every once in a while, loves World Cup soccer, all that stuff, and has never seen those two fights. And I want to put my hand on that person's shoulder and go, what are you doing? What are you doing? How could you not know those two fights that you just described, Castillo Corrales and Gotti Ward 1? They're on another planet. They really are. It's like, it's honestly past even talking about. Like, it's sort of a experience. It's like a religious thing watching those guys really do it. And I want to say what really rejuvenated my love for boxing, because again, I grew up those Tyson years, and I grew up Hagler and Hearns. That's my favorite fight, Hagler Hearns. What really rejuvenated my love of boxing was the HBO doc series Legendary Nights, and the one where they go into the camps. What the hell are those camps? 360?
24/7.
Those series give you the context of knowing what is at stake for these two men that are in the ring.
Sure.
And again, you can watch just a fight with two men in the ring, and to your point, either one of these two or both of them could pass away. They could pass away from this venture that they're entering into.
And we're all agreeing to that fact. We all know this coming in.
And then they add those doc series that give you a little bit of their backstory and the kids and they've, you know, grew up poor and whatever the backstory was. It just to me, it roots me even deeper in what's going on in these moments.
Sure.
I absolutely love those, all of them. I don't care who's fighting. If they made a doc series on it, I'm watching, and we'll talk about the one for this McGregor Aldo fight as well. Coming up. Did you pick your favorite fighter?
No. So here's what it is.
Oh,
my second favorite fighter is Sugar Ray Leonard. He's the first fighter that caught my heart as a kid. I cried when Terry Norris knocked him out in the early 90s, and it was like, oh, he's done. Only he came back another, you know, amount of times. My favorite fighter is Oscar De La Hoya, but it wasn't supposed to be that. And people are like, really? This pretty boy? Oh, didn't he wear fishnets that time? He did. He did wear fishnets that time. And, you know, I think we're at the point now where we can say, hey, that's okay, man. But here's the deal. Oscar post-career, or even really the second half of his career on, it's been a train wreck. He's had substance abuse issues, mental health challenges. You know, I relate to him. My heart pours out to him. But the reason why he's my favorite fighter is because he got pushed down all of our throats, right? Golden Boy won the gold medal, getting all the his pro debut on national television, pushed down our throats. Oh, maybe he won a couple fights that people thought he didn't against Pernell Whitaker or what have you. But have you ever seen him fight Ike Corte? Have you ever seen him when he was potentially down on the scorecards in round 12, yet he got up off the canvas and knocked Corte down? There is a backbone underneath that guy that me, as the sports fan who I guess inevitably falls for the pretty boys, right? They're marketable. They get your attention. But I always, like everybody else, go, yeah, but is he a real fighter at the end of the day?
Yeah.
You know what? It turned out he was a real fighter at the end of the day. The best thing about Oscar's legacy, besides the fishnets, besides the debate of whether substance abuse killed the second half of his career, was this. This is his Hall of Fame legacy. He always tried to fight the biggest and most difficult name possible.
Yes.
As a fan, that's everything you should or could ever ask for.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. A bunch of things. One, I really appreciate the UFC make sure that they make the fights that everyone wants to see. I appreciate that from the UFC. Two, you're very good at this. It's very clear why you work in this industry and that you've been successful as you are and have been and will continue to be. Was that always a dream of yours? Like, at what point did you go, I want to work in this sport and then be a broadcaster? When did that all happen?
My dream in life was, I grew up 20 minutes outside of ESPN. My dream in life was just to work at ESPN. I don't care. Right. Am I cutting hockey highlights? Am I the janitor? And I got into sports writing and I sort of hit a, you know, quarter life crisis. Is this ever going to go anywhere? I'm covering high school football, but who cares? I got lucky enough to finally get in the back door at ESPN in my late 20s. And it was 12 incredibly long, low pay, uphill climb years like a lot of us have to do in this industry. But I got to ESPN and I remember getting to a point where I had a boss who sat me down, the late, great Anthony Mormile. By the way, his son is my podcast producer today. And I love that fact that it's all full circle right here. But Anthony Mormile said to me, you work hard for us. We love you. What do you want to do? I can make a phone call upstairs. You want to be an NFL blogger? You want to be an NBA editor? What's your end game? I said, boss, you can't pick what you love. And I love boxing.
You knew it right away. There's no, you didn't pause. You didn't like go get, let me take a night to think about this. You knew it right away.
And I think I had one story published on ESPN.com that I begged the editor to let me write. I had no footing in this business.
Right.
But I remember saying to him and looking him in the eye, because he goes, here's the part that hurt. This was 2011, or 2010. He goes, how many people right now are getting paid full time? He goes, you have young children. How many people are getting paid full time to cover boxing? At that point, it was two and a half people.
Right.
Today, it might be one. You know what I mean? It really might be one. You usually have to be like boxing and NBA or do what I did, which is acquire mixed martial arts, which I love, by the way, but, you know, and do both. And I remember just telling them, I can't stop this obsession. This is what I want to do. And somewhere along the way, though, I just said, you know what? I might be able to do this. And thank God, here's where I am today.
I'm not going to move into the moment yet either. I've got another question. I want you to rank the Rocky movies from worst to best.
Wow. Did you know that I had just ahead of Creed 3 introduced my 15-year-old twin sons to the Rocky and Creed series, made them watch every single movie in consecutive order, and then did a podcast from my podcast Morning Combat where I ranked every single one.
No, I didn't know that. Now I feel bad that I didn't know that. Hold on. You have a ranking. You know what they are.
Yes.
Okay. Give me your rankings, worst to best, the Rocky franchise.
Okay. The worst one is Rocky V.
I don't agree with that.
While I have maintained over the years that there's an endearing charm to that movie.
Yes.
Mostly because I actually like the script. And people forget.
Same.
They brought back the director from Rocky I. It was the first time he came back into the series.
I didn't realize that.
And they did that gritty retread of Rocky loses it all. He's back in his home city. Only there's this young kid, Tommy Morrison, who wants to get trained. And Rocky's focusing too much on the kid when he should be focused on his own son. It's a beautiful story. It was just executed absurdly. And not to mention that there's no continuity, because the Rocky V picks up the second after Rocky IV ends.
Yes.
Only they are in a different house.
Yes.
The kids are different ages. Yes. I mean, it's just a
crazy
absolute
train. Okay. I'll allow that. I just want to say that I enjoy Rocky V, but go keep going.
Creed II, I think, is second worst. And even though that had the Drago son storyline, again, should have been perfect. It just didn't hit.
Wait, so you like Creed 3 more than Creed 2?
I do. Controversially, I do. Should I like that they tried
this?
Something
should we
different.
Stop this conversation? We just go then just Rocky 2.
People knee jerk and act like Rocky 2 is a classic because it feels at times like Rocky 1 and it picks up again right where it left off. Rocky 2 is the, whereas Rocky 1, the charm in that movie is the gritty acting. It didn't even seem like Stallone was acting. It seemed like he's just being it. Part 2, they override. I mean, remember he's crying next to Adrian on the, when she's in a coma. I mean, it's horrible.
I just want to be clear. You have Creed 3 over Rocky 2.
I do. Rocky 2 needs to be reexamined. People need to go back and actually watch it. Because here's the problem. People love the end scene in Rocky 2, which is great, right? The double knockdown, it's incredible. Yes. The rest of that movie's a sneaky train wreck, okay?
All right, okay.
Then we're going to go Creed 3.
Okay.
The villain. What's the fella's name? The villain is...
I don't know his name. But
the
I
bad guy is...
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Jonathan Majors, is that his name? Absolutely incredible. Boy, absolutely incredible. I actually like the chances they took in the main event fight where other people didn't, with the cage and all the kind of weirdness, Dodger Stadium. Yeah. I was all into that. Spoiler alert, okay? Where are we now in the countdown? It would be Creed 1.
Yes, right. Creed 1.
Creed 1 is great. I think it's great. I do.
I enjoy it.
I cannot believe I rewatched it twice before counting these down, and I cannot believe how good it is. It's formulaic in what they're trying to do, but yet it felt fresh. It felt good introducing new characters. I mean, Michael B. Jordan rules in that role. It's fantastic. Even Mrs. Cosby is great and fantastic.
Felicia Rashad is a gem.
I don't know if we can call her that legally anymore. then here's the rest of it, okay? And I think this is pretty easy.
This is getting exciting.
Rocky IV I have at number 3. And I could justify that at number 1. In fact, that was my number 1 for many, many, many years. But
I'm aghast.
But what we love about it is also what holds it back from being number 1, right? I mean, it is not a boxing movie. It does not fit into the Rocky series. It is a peak Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Seagal action movie. And it is the fastest moving of the series. Remember that scene where Drago's getting poked with the steroid needle? That's the whole movie. It's just on steroids. And the greatest soundtrack of all time, Rafe Bartholomew and I did a Grantland Boxing Podcast where we picked No Easy Way Out as the theme song, obviously, right? Okay, number 2 is Rocky 3. And I think this has a case for being the best ever. I really do. I really think it does.
You have Rocky 3 above Rocky 4.
Yes. And I think if you go back and watch that, it is almost as fast moving as Rocky 4, but it's just much better acted across the board. The fact that Rocky's dealing with doubt, the fact that Mickey reveals, well, we've been padding your record since you became champ for a while. And it's like, you know, and he wants to retire. And Mr. T is just everything in that movie. And also Burgess Meredith as Mickey is just, he pours his guts out for that one.
For sure.
And even though it's not sexy to put Rocky 1 at number 1, I mean, it's the only one that's a great pure movie.
I get it. I do think you've lost the room. I think you've lost the audience. I think everyone that's listening to this now hates you.
It's possible because these touch, you know, and I was a Rocky 4 number 1 guy forever, but I had to come to reality with that.
I feel bad, Brian. This is my show. I'm supposed to be taking care of you. I gave you a thing that you said and now people are furious at you. They can't believe you said the dumb things that you've said. I'm not saying that they're dumb, but I do know that a lot of people are saying that they're dumb as they're listening to this in their cars or wherever they're listening. I apologize to you for that. You might get a DM or something from somebody that says that was stupid and that you're an idiot. And again, it's not my business. I want to defend you, but also it's not my business because if that's how they feel and maybe I think four has to be at least two.
I'm not against you on that. I'm telling you that 4 was my favorite my whole life, but is it the greatest film? I think it's the third.
It is. I think it is. Wait, where do you have Rocky Balboa?
Oh, so I forgot that. That's a great call. That's the one that I forgot. I put Rocky Balboa between Creed 1.
Yes.
And whatever I had after that in my
But under it or above it?
Above it. So I guess that would be 5th.
I'm agreed. Yes. I love Rocky Balboa. That's a blast.
I think if they would have ended that movie before the final fight scene, it might be in the top 2.
Yes.
Like that is among the most brilliant work. That's probably Stallone's second best acted whole series outside of Rocky 1.
You just got us back, Brian. Congratulations.
But here's the deal though. the ending, the final fight, it brought us back into the cheesy part of what Rocky's are about.
That's what I'm willing to do, though. I'm willing, if I like a movie, or if a movie's really close to me, I'll just snip that out. I don't even care about that last fight. Yeah. Just take it out. Okay. Did it happen? Was it in the movie? Is it in the movie if I watch it right now? Of course it is. But just take it out and just judge it for all the lovely things that happened before that. Listen, we got to move on. We've talked so long. We got to decide whether the McGregor Aldo fight goes into the First Bout Hall of Fame. To do that, we have to go through our First Bout Hall of Fame credentials. Those are the categories by which we judge our moment. The first credential, as always, analytics. Here are the numbers. Here's some numbers behind this moment. Brian, jump in whenever you have something to add. Aldo was 25-1 entering the fight. His first loss was in 2005, very early in his career. Aldo then went undefeated for a decade. 10 years he does not lose, undefeated in the UFC, 15-0 in UFC fights. He was at the time the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the UFC. Conor, 18-2 at the time of the Aldo fight. He lost in 2008 and 2010. He was 7-0 in the UFC, winning all but one by knockout, with wins against Max Holloway, Dustin Poirier, and Chad Mendez. Conor, 2 inches taller, 4-inch reach advantage, naturally heavier fighter. Certainly worth mentioning here. I read some insane stat at some point about, like, when you're the bigger fighter, like, at this level, the bigger fighter is supposed to win, like, fucking, like, 95% of the time, or some crazy fucking stat. Obviously, don't quote that, because that shit's not real. But I remember hearing it as a kid and being like, I got to remember that forever. Anytime some bigger dude drops down and then just mops somebody, it's like, listen, let's take it easy on the little dude that tried to fight the bigger guy.
Well, I got to add to your stats there and say this about Aldo, the King of Rio, right? Brazil's finest. Over that 10 years, he was 18-0. And we're talking about 10 of those being title fights in which he won them all across the UFC and WEC. Now, the WEC was originally a rival of the UFC. Then they bought it. It held their lower weight divisions until they decided to lump them all together under the UFC banner. So when Aldo made the transition from WEC to UFC, they didn't even make him fight for the title. They just put the UFC title around his waist. And he beat many fighters over that 18-fight stretch. But we're talking about Cub Swanson, Mike Thomas Brown, Uriah Faber, Kenny Florian, Chad Mendes twice, the Korean Zombie, and Frankie Edgar. When Aldo enters this fight, he's already like on the short list of the greatest fighters of all time, yet he's at the peak of his physical and mental prime.
Yes. I love this. Sports Joe, somebody named Sports Joe, posted Conor spent 2,329 seconds in a UFC octagon. Aldo had four times as much experience. The fight was more or less even money. I saw some that had Aldo as the plus 105 dog. I saw Conor listed as a plus 115 dog and a minus 135 favorite. Conor landed 5 of 6 significant strikes. Jose landed 1 of his 3 punches, the one on his way out. It was Conor's third strike of the fight that landed and knocked Aldo out. The match lasted 13 seconds. At the time, it was the second most watched UFC pay-per-view. UFC 194 had 1.2 million buys. UFC 100, Frank Mir and Brock Lesnar had 1.3. McGregor has gone on to tie that $1.3 million buy record 7 times, topping out at 2.4 million. The UFC's most watched fight against Khabib Nurmagomedov. Conor has the top 6 most watched fights in UFC history. Any thoughts on these stats?
If I can add to your stats here, Conor McGregor's career as we record this is obviously not over, although it's very much feeling like it's in the twilight.
Yes.
But what's his greatest legacy? Becoming the first champ, simultaneous 2-division champ? Maybe. How about this? The 10 biggest pay-per-view fights in UFC history, he headlined 8 of them. Of his 8 headlining pay-per-views, 7 sold more than 1 million buys. And this was during a time when the only people that sold more than 1 million buys were Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather, and the tail end of Mike Tyson's prime, post-jail, you know, commercial prime. Like, that's rarefied air. And on top of that, Conor had only been in the UFC for 2.5 years. So this was like old school, the establishment against the wild, brash newcomer. And it's interesting that you said right there that the odds were that close, and you always have to give Vegas credit for being sharp and knowing the potential. But entering this fight, this was the fight that was going to shut Conor McGregor up. This was the fight that, okay, you're good in these areas, but you ain't beating the King of Rio.
Yeah.
And you certainly ain't beating him and the quickest finish in UFC title history that still stands today.
Oh, my God. This is fantastic. All right. Let's go to the next credential. It's the ear test. What did we hear in this moment? Listen, I'm going to play the full fight. Why the hell not? 13 seconds. Let's listen to it together.
The most highly anticipated featherweight fight of all time.
Conor looks extremely loose, and Aldo looks like he's feeling the pressure of this moment.
Green trunks for the southpaw, the notorious Conor McGregor. Black trunks for the champion, Jose Aldo Jr.
Conor relaxed and smiling.
Oh! He slapped him! Conor McGregor is the new UFC featherweight champion of the world!
Oh! Oh! Unbelievable! Oh my God! Unbelievable! The first punch he threw!
Mike Goldberg and Joe Rogan on the call. Your thoughts on that call there?
Yeah, the defining moment of that call that Joe Rogan said that echoes in every highlight package of the greatest moments is slept him. He slept him. He literally called his shot and said, I'm going to knock you out with the first punch I throw. And while it wasn't the first punch he threw and technically not the first punch he landed, he literally knocked out the pound-for-pound greatest fighter of that moment with the first legitimate punch that he threw exactly the way he said he would. I've covered combat sports since 2010 on a, you know, sort of a national level as an editor, writer, now a, you know, broadcaster. It's very often, definitely in boxing, that when there's a finish in a fight, a big fight, you'll hear all the fixes in, right? Mm-hmm. Boxing, it makes sense because there's always hijinks associated with boxing, with bad decisions or questionable referee movements or whatever. MMA, on the other hand, we do have to realize there are so many ways to freaking lose in MMA, right? Mm-hmm. From submissions to breaking your leg when you go for a kick and all of that. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. Yet, he literally walked in there and finished this guy who was the best fighter in the world on an 18-fight win streak who hadn't lost in 10 years and did so by exactly calling his shot. Like, that, and he did that for like three consecutive fights during this build.
Yeah.
There was, I have never before heard so many people say, oh my God, the fix was in. Obviously, Jose Aldo took a fall. Obviously, the UFC with the C standing for Conor wanted him to be right. their star. I have never seen a fight that produced more of a knee-jerk reaction to right. that. And the reason why is because it wasn't supposed to happen.
Yes.
And it damn well wasn't supposed to happen with one punch
yeah.
after. Let's not forget one thing, Neil. They were supposed to fight 5 months, 6-7 months earlier in July, International Fight Week, UFC's centerpiece, the WrestleMania, if you will, of the year. Aldo pulled out with an injury. McGregor had torn his ACL 14 weeks prior, yet fought Chad Mendes, a late replacement, on one leg, won the fight, kept the momentum going, trash talked this king of MMA, relentlessly, and then walked in there and did exactly what he said and delivered one punch. McGregor had something around him that I call magic that, and this is why sports is great, right? I'm going to mention two moments that right away everybody will understand. Jeremy Lin's couple weeks where he was dancing on the clouds.
Yep.
And Tim Tebow's run to the playoffs with the Broncos that one year.
Yep.
Where things were happening in front of your eyes that did not make sense.
Yep.
Jeremy Lin should not be able to hit fadeaway threes over Kobe and drop 38 in the garden. Like, I think this shit should not stand. It should not happen.
Yep.
Even though Conor McGregor was close to even money because of his mouth, and even though we all respected his fighting ability, that was not friggin' supposed to happen. It would be like Pacquiao walking in and knocking Mayweather out with the first punch he landed in that super fight.
Right.
The reason why everybody said the fix was in is because we did not believe what we just saw.
Yeah.
That is what makes sports so great. This was one of the most ridiculous results in elite combat sports that there has ever been.
I'm going to add to that. It was perfectly said. The words matter. That's what I'll say. Words matter. And a lot of times people use words and I'm like, do you know what that word actually means? Like, do you know the root of that word? And like, is that what you're really saying? I think that way a lot. That knockout, it's unbelievable. You cannot believe that it happened. It is as I think about it, and you give me your response to this, it is the finest execution of a prize fighting game plan I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's not a lucky punch. A lucky punch.
That's right.
He didn't just set him up for that punch. He had been setting Jose Aldo up for over a year with mental warfare.
That's exactly
the
right.
kind of stuff that doesn't break people like Jose Aldo.
Yes
get what it got him to, look what it got him to do. It got him to come forward,
that's
cross
right.
the center line with his hands down, trying to set up a combination and walking right into the perfect all-time missile. When I talk about magic, what that really means is there's no limits to what they are capable of. When McGregor knocked him out with one punch, you not only heard the Twitter go nuts talking about a fix, because it was inconceivable.
We have a standing rule here on the show that when something feels magical, it's got a real goddamn chance of going to the first Bell Hall of Fame. And it really does. We're going to get into the sort of magical part of this as we keep going here. The one thing I want to reference quickly here in the ear test, Joe Rogan, who I don't agree with a lot of the things that he says, but he is an absolutely exquisite play-by-play color commentator, UFC, true or false.
Yeah, especially back then. I think he's a little bit past his prime now, and
right.
he only does the big events, and some people like other fight, you know, ex-fighters before, but Rogan played such a key role in this company's history, and at this point in 2015, he is at the top of his game. That's all you need to say. He slapped him. That's all you needed to say right there.
Also, what about the Conor looks extremely loose? Because he is exactly right. Like, there was a lightness and a bounciness and a readiness to Conor that you could feel instantly. And then the camera pans over. And again, this is just great directing work by whoever the director was of this fight. Camera pans over and he's like, and Jose Aldo looks like he's carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders or whatever it is that he said. It just framed the fight and the start of this thing perfectly. It just set this table perfectly for this one shot knockout. It was just a fantastic little broadcast on a very short fight.
Cue the ESPN 30 for 30 narrator voice. What if I told you that not only would Conor McGregor knock out the best fighter in UFC over the past decade, right, with one punch, but that Aldo would be crying during the post-fight interview while McGregor is effortlessly sitting on the cage doing the cash cheddar hand gesture, but not doing it in a way like, oh my God, I can't believe I just won the Super Bowl. Doing it in a way of like, told you, told you I would do that. But there is just something about being able to command and control the moment and bend it to your willpower that is what we always say fight sports inspires you, because people get up off the canvas and do what we all want to do in life. But how about that right there? What if we could tap into that? What if you, Neil, could tap into the magic of literally Kevin Garnett, anything is possible because I said it was. There was something special. McGregor's almost a character now. A lot of people talk about his partying and ridiculousness, and he's pretty ridiculous. Never forget who he was in this run, because it was a killer.
You said it. This was a window. This was a real window. And I think about, being half Filipino, I think about Manny a lot. And I think about, you mentioned De La Hoya early. That De La Hoya Manny fight changed my life. And then he goes on that run, and it's, I don't remember the exact order, but it's like Hatton and Cotto and Margarito. And I don't know, but I remember, I'll never forget that window of time. That window of time is a God. That is a God. That is as good as it gets for like a fighter to have that window where they're on the top of the world and they're putting on real performances. And to your point, bending things to their will, and they're entertaining and they're funny and they're charismatic. You look at the, however a fighter's career ends, and you go, I remember when this guy got knocked out, or they lost this, but Manny gets knocked out by Marquez, or Conor snaps his leg. And like, those are the things that linger with you, but not me, man. All I remember is those windows of just pure beauty and sporting excellence that the world had never seen up until those moments in those windows. It's, I just really appreciate it. And this was right there, probably the top of the mountain for Connor. The eye test is next, the next credential. What did you see in this moment? Did you see anything in this fight that just gives it a little extra added oomph?
I mean, you know, I expect maybe to see an eye of the tiger with Connor. He's not even have that. He's walking out to the cage, you know, making these like scowling, funny faces. I mean, he is so loose as if he belongs here, as if this, you know, his story was already pre-written and he's just walking through the motions. Wow, that stands out huge. It's funny. You said this could be the mountaintop. I actually think the McGregor mountaintop moment is a year later against Eddie Alvarez, UFC 205, Madison Square Garden, where he's got two belts now, one on each shoulder, and he's suddenly in the post-fight interview asking the UFC how to buy, he wants to be a stock owner, wants to, you know, and that would lead, of course, to him making record-breaking money a year later with Floyd Mayweather and that, you know, that perfect storm of combat, putting two stars together. But this Aldo moment is the most important moment in the run. And to look back at that, knowing the impact of this moment now, but then reliving it and watching Connor's mannerisms, you would have thought this was him fighting on the regional scene for peanuts. That I mean, I don't understand how you're able to calm yourself and walk through that in the way he did. Brilliant stuff.
The parallel that I want to make quickly is I think about, and again, maybe it's just where I was in my own personal life, but when Manny beats De La Hoya and then Manny knocks out Hatton, those are the signature moments for Manny's career. But what he does to Cotto and Margarito are probably more impressive and much more dominant. And that's what it feels like with this Connor moment. This Connor moment, this might be the most important, but I agree with you. That Alvarez fight is something else. And then that whole moment, which we'll get to that in a second as well. Fantastic. I really appreciate it. Also, fuck Manny's politics. I don't appreciate that either. Anyways, my eye test thing, him, and we're going to get to here in a sec, that him stepping back, that little slip, he is off his front foot. I'm like framing through this. I like downloaded the clip and I'm like framing through it in QuickTime to see his front foot is off the ground when that punch connects on Aldo's chin. To think about knocking a dude out like Jose Aldo, when you are backing up and your front foot is off the ground, he's got one foot on the goddamn ground and knocks a dude out. It's just an amazing performance. The execution, I can't even wrap my head around it.
It's pinpoint precision. Yes. I mean, you did an episode on this about the great upset of Kimbo Slice and Seth Petruzzelli, which that was another fight where in the moment we're like, that's got to be a fix, right? He hit him with a jab, only he was backing up, allowing Kimbo to come forward and hit him with the most perfect short pinpoint shot. That's exactly what Connor did. Only this ain't Kimbo Slice. This is Jose Aldo. And what you have to love is that wasn't the first left cross, which is Connor's money punch that he threw. We mentioned that he threw one earlier, what, about 5 seconds earlier, and he came up short. But Jose Aldo mentioned it in the post-fight interview. He said, Connor surprised me by coming out so early with that left cross. He hit me in the chest. And that got Aldo thinking that if he comes back with that, I'm going to step in, throw a two-punch combo, essentially block the first punch with his right hand, land the second one. And as we know, he did land the second one. It's just that Connor's was quicker, shorter, perfect. And as you mentioned, while going backwards, man, I mean, when you've got the confidence to know you can deliver in a, you know, you can thread the needle like that, that's something else.
Let's move to our next credential. It's the test of time. This is when we compare this moment against other moments. Like it, you've already talked. The first question I had here was, is this McGregor's best fight? I think I agree with you. I think it's Alvarez.
Well, I say Alvarez is his mountaintop moment because the second half of his career, outside of the money against Mayweather, was downhill. He never got bigger. And the magic was never finer than him moving up in weight and doing what he said he would against Alvarez. But there's no win bigger than this. There's nothing.
Well, what about that? What about the rematch with Nate Diaz?
That was I got to give you that. That was a great call. That showed Connor digging in when we questioned his cardio. Let's not forget that he's basically up two weight classes at welterweight, because he fought Nate at UFC 196 last minute when RDA, Rafael Dos Anjos, who was the lightweight champion at the time, pulled out with a foot injury. Yes, the way that Connor fell apart in that first fight with Nate at UFC 196, got submitted after dominating early, but then later that summer came back and just at UFC 202 fought with a level of guts and, I don't know, like ability to like reinvent himself within a fight that he's never had again. Connor is it, like, here's the secret on Connor. A little bit of a front runner, right? Is going to beat you with plan A, one of the best first round fighters in the history of combat sports, right? Yeah. Like, is just going to come out and it's going to be, you know, his left hand's going to find your chin. Yeah. The whole question is he going to be close enough and perfect enough to knock you out? Really, that rematch with Nate Diaz, which I remember writing a front page column from ESPN.com during that time, that was like, Connor needs to win this or that magic, that invincibility is gone forever. Yes. And to his credit, he did dig in on a level he that really did. I didn't think was possible. And he won a close, incredible action fight.
Agreed. So listen, the test of time, let's compare the Connor's great post match or press conference moments. That's the test of time here, because this is what we need. Is what Connor did after this Aldo fight, is it great? Where does it rank among the other phenomenal Connor McGregor microphone moments? Let's listen to what Connor said right after the Aldo fight. Here it is.
Again, nobody can take that left hand shot. But I tell you, he's powerful and he's fast. But precision beats power and timing beats speed. And that's what you saw there.
That is so good. In my head, he had to have planned that, right? Do you think he wrote that?
It's perfect. It described the situation.
Perfect. It's too good. Listen, this is what I want to say. Listen, I don't even care if he wrote it. If he wrote it and memorized it and then went through the biggest fight of his career, knocked a dude out cold in 13 seconds, and had the wherewithal to pull this pre-scripted line back up in his head and say it and drop it and nail the delivery, if that's all legit, even if he wrote this ahead or someone wrote it for him, I don't care. He nailed the delivery. It was perfect. And if he riffed that live, the fuck out of here. That's fantastic.
It's great. And that extended post-fight interview with Rogan, I mean, it's just talking perfect about, you know, timing beating speed and precision, all that. I mean, God. Like, this moment, again, was not an accident, because he predicted it would happen this way. And this is the moment he was setting up for perfectly. But you said sort of rank his post-fight reaction in history. I think the greatest post-fight Connor moment is, it actually needs to be brought up now, because it set the stage for this eventual fight with Aldo. And it came two fights earlier, early 2015, when he fought Dennis Seaver in a main event in Boston, which was a respected guy, but somebody we expected him to beat. But this was a huge showcase, putting Connor in a main event in Boston, all Irish fans, all of that. And they put Jose Aldo, his wife and kids, in the front row. And after Connor scored the knockout, what did he do? This is before this became cliche.
Right.
He leaped over the cage, hurdled the security, got in the front row as Mrs. Aldo looked like, you know, a home invader had entered, and started jawing with Jose Aldo. I'm going to say something, Neil. Like, I really try hard not to compare to the all-time greats, because it becomes sacrilegious almost, right? Like, there's only one boxer today, for example, that I say gives me Mayweather feels. That's Shakur Stevenson, a young guy who, if you don't know him, you will soon. Two division champion already, future pound for pound king. The only person in my history of watching combat sports that I said was Ali like was Connor during this stretch.
It's the truth.
And it's not just the gift of gab and always having the right line at the right time, but when he went to do these ridiculous intimidating things. Don't think of Connor from the Habib build, even though that's the biggest fight of all time a few years later. That version of Connor, I think, was too rich, overcompensating, trying to get in the head of this, you know, foreign villain here, Habib. But the Connor during the magic rise right here, that's the only time we'll ever see anyone that can hold a candle to Ali. And the only reason, Neil, I'm comfortable in making that prediction is because he followed it up. He not only said it, he delivered it exactly the way he said he would for like a 3-4 fight stretch, in ways that, in hindsight, again, just blows your friggin' mind.
I feel like you're like trying to explain this to me, and like you're like you wanted to protect yourself and be like, listen, I know this is like a crazy thing to say, and I'm sitting here going, I don't honestly know how anybody can argue against it. He is so he has this insane mixture of like super funny and also really eloquent and like nailing the reads and the way he says it. Here's another one. He does the whole Mystic Mac thing. He coins his own nickname. And then this is what he says to his legion of Irish fans right after a win.
I wanted to come over here to America and show the American public the new era of the Fighting Irish, and I brought my whole country with me.
We don't, if one of us go to war, we all go to war.
I mean, he just spent whatever it was. He just spent 15, 20 minutes getting punched in the face and like running around, and his future's on the line, and his family's financial, you know, solvency is hanging in the balance. And then he's pulling out these lines that are just setting the stage perfectly. He's just writing this incredible story with his pen in the middle of a ring with cameras on him. He's dripping sweat. There's a guy sticking a mic in his mouth, and he's saying all these perfect things. It's just amazing to think about.
Yeah. And it's one thing to say, it's another thing to back it up, but he was always on point. The Conor McGregor fight weeks are more fun than even the best boxing. I just told you that boxing at its best, there's nothing like it, and I still agree with that. But there's Conor McGregor fight weeks were more fun than most fights, more fun than whatever, because there was always that edge that there could be a fight breaking out any time. He's going to make you laugh. I'll never forget UFC 205 when he showed up late with the mink coat, shirtless underneath, and he's like, "Sorry, I'm late. I just don't give a fuck." And I mean, it just hit perfectly. And you of course remember after he knocked out Eddie Alvarez when he's like, "I'd like to take a moment to apologize to absolutely nobody." The double champ does what he wants. I don't know if we'll see this again, Neil. And all you have to do is, there's a couple of Conor McGregor documentaries out there, but there's actually one in particular which follows his pre-UFC days into some of these fights we're talking about, like Aldo. And before he was even in the UFC, there's a camera in his bedroom with his girlfriend, now his significant other, sitting next to him. And he's saying the same things back then.
Yep.
Only he has no money to his name and nobody knows who he is.
Yep.
He has become such a character that it is hard to remember who he was. But Neil, you're not going to see another guy like this.
It's the truth.
You're just not.
I just can't imagine seeing it. Here are the rest of these clips. Here's one. This is at the tail end of a pretty long post-fight interview. So again, this man has been punched in the face. Someone tried to kill him for like 20 minutes, and then someone sticks a microphone and a camera in his face and goes, "Now be eloquent and entertaining." And then he does it for a long time. And at the end of the interview, he says this.
I said it last year. We're not here just to take part. We're here to take over.
Absolutely perfect. Here's Conor in a pre-fight lead up. You're talking about the pre-fight Conor. Here's another classic.
Who do you think would give you the hardest fight out of anybody on stage?
Right here.
That's a question to Conor.
Right here, the hardest hitting 145 pound, the real hardest hitting 145er right here. This guy TKOs people. When I knock people out, they don't fucking move. They're not. Who the fuck is that guy?
Conor's just in complete control. He's in complete control. When you think you've got a chance to steal a little bit of spotlight from him, he's in total control. He doesn't rush forward. He doesn't need to throw some giant haymaker. He just steps back and throws that shot right on the button, knocked out cold. It's perfect control. In the ring, outside of the ring, on the microphone, it's super duper impressive. Here is Conor with Floyd pre-fight. This is probably the funniest thing I've ever heard leading up to a prize fight.
What the fuck? He's 40! You're 40 years of age! Dress your fucking age! Carrying a school bag on stage! What are you doing with a school bag on stage? You can't even read!
I mean, he's just on another planet. And you mentioned this earlier. This is Conor's masterpiece. Let's listen to this in part. Here is part one.
I'm here with the winner and new, and for the first time ever, two division champion, Conor McGregor. The first man ever to hold two titles simultaneously. How does this all feel to you?
Where the fuck is my second belt? I've already got this one. Where's the second one at? Cheap motherfuckers. $4.2 billion this company was sold for. Where's that second belt?
And he's not done. He's just beaten Eddie Alvarez, Joe Rogan back into the fray.
What challenges you now? Now that you are a two-division champion, are your thoughts to try to defend both titles? Are your thoughts to stay at lightweight? What do you want to do?
Look, what's next for me, Joe? I'm going to get that second belt. Where the fuck is it? They should have had them two belts ready, special for me.
And then here, I mean, this is the wrap up. This is the grand finale. The best line that I've ever heard in a fight ever, period. And I don't even think anything's even remotely close.
I've spent a lot of time, Joe, slating everybody in the company. Backstage, I'm starting fights off everybody. I've ridiculed everyone on the roster. I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody. The double champ does what the fuck he wants.
I mean, it's just a perfect setup. It's a perfect setup. The only thing I wish is that Joe Rogan hadn't said, here's your second belt. Just that little, just hearing Joe in the background, man, leave that naked. I wish the UFC uploaded that and just pulled that out. That is just devastatingly funny and charming and entertaining. It's just, he is so goddamn good.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why he's, you know, the most popular, the biggest star in the history of this sport. And what preceded him, let's not forget, were the short but incredible Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey eras, right, where UFC had their first legitimate, I mean, yes, look, Chuck Liddell was big, Tito, right, Ortiz was big, but they had household crossover, yes, event names in Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey, yet Conor took that to another, yeah, level. And I, yeah, want to bring that Ali comparison back in one more time, because again, it's one thing to be able to say all this stuff and have the timing and be funny, but also be charming. It's another thing to deliver. But his grasp of mental warfare, that's what's most Ali-like. How did Ali beat Sonny Liston, if you're a boxing historian, yes, in the first fight? By making Liston believe he's crazy.
Right.
How did Conor beat Jose Aldo? Because they had two builds to the fight, because Aldo pulled out of that fight, like I mentioned, months earlier. And this is back when the UFC used to put some money behind the pay-per-view promotion. They went on a multi-city press tour. They went to Brazil. Conor is trashing the local Brazils, bringing up the favelas, making fun of it. And then he goes over and steals Jose Aldo's belt.
So
over time, think of him jumping the fence that I mentioned and running into the crowd after he beat Seaver. Those are planting seeds in Jose Aldo's head that A, this guy might actually be crazy enough to be as good as he says he is, but B, I freaking hate this guy so much that I'm going to get out of character, yes, to try to prove to him how much he's wrong. And I don't want people to realize, if you weren't a day-to-day MMA fan, even though these odds were close, it was expected that inevitably Conor, who did not have a well-rounded game, he had a left hand and he had great timing. Inevitably, when he fought a complete, well-rounded fighter, particularly one who can wrestle, that the gig would be up. It would be all over. But if he can get to your chin before that happens,
my God,
you know what I'm saying? Like, this was the greatest thing. He is the greatest gift the UFC has ever received. It really is.
So it's time to get into this. Let's dive into the magic of this moment. It does feel a little bit, even like when he's like, Conor feels incredibly loose. He seems like he's on another vibration. He feels like he's on a different wavelength. And then you talk about the fact that they were supposed to fight previously. And Conor, during that lead up, predicted that he thought Jose might bail out of their first fight. He predicted he might bail, and then he did. And then he came back and Conor completely and totally predicted how this was going to go. He called his shot. Like that's the thing I think about. When I think about Babe Ruth calling his shot, which I don't even know the truth behind that story. We'll have to do an episode on the calling his shot at some point. But as a kid, someone told me once Babe Ruth walked up to bat, pointed where he was going to hit the ball, and then hit a home run there. And as a kid, I was like, that's the most insane thing I've ever heard in my life.
1932 World Series, so it wasn't a game that mattered.
Fucking Jesus Christ. See, I don't know anything about it. It could have been any game. To do that in any game and then to hit the home run in that direction feels amazing. It feels like otherworldly. And when I think about this moment, I go, Conor told everybody what he was going to do time and time again, and then he did it. Let's listen to Conor again pre-fight leading up. Here's what Conor had to say.
I think the right hand could be, if you look at the... I felt when we stared down, I felt his right hand was twitching a little bit, but it was a subtle tell for me. He is ready to unload that right hand, but I feel that could be a downfall for him. If he lets that right hand go, I will not be there. If I faint and he reacts some way, I will faint and give him that reaction to set him up for something else. I will create traps and dead space inside that octagon
all over the place, and I will walk him into it like a zombie.
I mean, he did exactly that. And then there's this apocryphal clip, which maybe you've seen online. We'll put it on our social at First Ballot Pod on Twitter, at First Ballot HOF on Instagram. I realize those should be the same. Where Joe Rogan is referencing watching Conor warm up for this fight. We talked about it earlier. Here is Joe discussing it on his pod.
See, and I think you do it again. Warming up in the dressing room, and then in contrast, like a split screen with him warming up right next to the actual fight itself. He was preparing exactly for that maneuver.
And he's mimicking
Aldo's face first movement, and he does this little slight step to his right hand side. He makes an adjustment. He throws the first left hand. The first left hand doesn't land. So if you watch him moving, he throws that side kick to the leg. Then he makes a very slight step to the right. Aldo moves to the right hand, counters him with the left. Boom. Boom.
Brian, he doesn't just win this fight, the biggest fight of his career, in fantastic fashion. Everything that he said he was going to do, he did. How do you explain that?
It's magic. And it's the same magic, by the way, that led me to wrongfully predict he was going to win, you know, every fight he's ever taken after the Eddie Alvarez fight, because I no longer could competently put a ceiling above what he's capable of. And that's, again, knowing that he's got a gap in his style. He doesn't have great takedown defense. He doesn't have submission ability. He's not a good wrestler. There are fighters who could absolutely expose him. And to some degree, they ultimately did. But when he was atop his game, I mean, it's freaky as you played those great clips to see, you know, he wasn't just stating what could happen in the future. He was naming the round, the time, the circumstance. That is an a beautiful mind understanding of being able to dig. It's I don't know how to explain it. Can you explain Jeremy Lin or Tim Tebow? No, you can't.
Well, right? that's what I want to ask. Do you put any stock? My wife is a witch, not like a bad, like a mean lady, but she feels things and says things and then they come true. And maybe that's just, you know, the bias of seeing it come true, but I think it's real. And I did not grow up this way. My father's an immigrant to this country. He would have thought that was stupid. I'd never admit to my father that I start to believe that maybe this stuff is real. But my wife goes, what if it is real? What if he could see the Matrix? What if Connor could see this? What if he did know? What if he is on a different wavelength? What if there is something magical and he knew and he could see this and he did speak it into existence? And my wife makes me go, what if that's real? Wouldn't that be fascinating if that's real? And that's what one of the gifts my wife has given me is to just open me up to that idea. Do you put any stock into that? Is that real?
I do.
Is Conor McGregor magic?
I mean, I'm a devout Christian. I've seen crazy things happen that I couldn't explain to you and no one would know. But what I've seen is that there are times in this life. I mean, my children were saved through miraculous medical recoveries when they were told they wouldn't live as small babies born 4.5 months premature. I mean, I've seen miracles happen. Mm. It's opened up my worldview understanding of what is possible. I did during this time say to people, is Connor dabbling in like black magic here? Is he like, is he like just ahead of the game and figured it out? I don't know what it is, but I do with him. I do point back to that confidence. It's not a regular confidence.
It isn't.
It is not at all a regular confidence. It's an abnormal, next level, visionary confidence. So whether you get to that point spiritually, through religion, through whatever your entry point is to that, if we all believe that you always hear that stat, we're only using, 10% of our brain, whatever it is.
Yes.
There's something next level that he's tapping into. Now, is Connor part of the Kabbalah occult? I don't know. Is he a Freemason? I don't know, Neil, but whatever, like they said in Harry Met Sally, I'll have what he was having back in 2015 and 16, because I mean, what's possible in your life, Neil? I mean, can you know, look at that man in the mirror, ask him to change his ways. I mean, what can I get some of that, please?
It's just think about that for a second. Take 1 second and think about this. Can you be so confident that you can make the thing that you want to have happen? Can you make it happen through the strength of your will and your positivity. It's just fascinating. If that's possible, if that has been possible, like, I'm not saying it's like everybody can do it, but is it, can you tap into that and use it for, it's just fascinating to think about.
Yeah.
I can't believe I turned that off for so long in my life.
Well, I think there's a power in belief and faith whatever, sure. Whatever you're believing in, there is a power in that. And you know, is it going to go perfect? Can I say I want to do this and that? I don't know, but could it give you your best fighting chance? Yeah. I think there's something to learn from that.
I totally agree. Fascinating to think about. We've got a couple other credentials here I want to rip through. Twitter fingers, any great tweets? I've got one here from a B. Campbell. He tweeted at Marathon Mike, I better believe I'll catch it. I hope McGregor is for real, but I have a hard time not seeing Aldo expose him. That's from you, Brian.
Wow.
Tweeting it at the Marathon Mike and saying that you believe Aldo will expose McGregor. How do you feel now that you are 100%?
Wow, I didn't even know I tweeted that. I have no idea who Marathon Mike is, but I want to tell you again, that was the thought that, hey, this guy's 100%. Fun as crap. Yes. He makes following the sport fun.
Right.
He predicts these things, but Jose Aldo is a whole nother level to it, right? You know, we all loved Hoop Dreams, but inevitably Arthur Agee was going to run into that city powerhouse that was going to take him down, right? You know, it's like, hey, fun while it lasted, right?
That's the truth. The X Factor, my X Factor here is that embedded series. It's the doc series that UFC does on YouTube. And again, they sort of are documenting the entire, you know, lead up to the fight. Connor says, quote, I would invade his favela on horseback. I mean, he is absolutely nuts. And again, another truly, we'll put this moment on the Instagram, on the socials as well. When he snatches, because again, Aldo's the title holder. The belt is sitting in front of Aldo and McGregor snatches it from him, steals it from him. I mean, it's just so funny. And that series is so good. And again, really sets the table for how much these two don't like each other, how much Connor is baiting this guy into being, you know, enraged. And then he steps into that punch. It's a fantastic X factor. And it's mine here. Do you have an X factor for this fight?
Well, I don't know if it's an X factor, but I'll say one thing about this fight.
Yeah.
To me, this is one of the shortlist fights of, like, if you did it at that point, right? Mm-hmm. This was December of 2015, and you had run it back 10 times. We always say that. Okay. You upset, you know, this team upset this team, but what happens in a 7-game series?
Yeah.
I still believe, like, the great unknown is what would this fight have actually looked like?
Right.
All we got was 13 seconds.
Yes.
Connor landed the perfect punch at the right time.
Great question.
Did he play mind games to get Jose to be open for that?
Yes.
He might have. It might have all worked out perfectly. But what the heck does that fight actually look like? It turned out just by happenstance, unfortunately for Jose, that he never got the rematch. Now, part of that is because the next year, Connor would stumble into a 2-fight series with Nate Diaz that we talked about that was outside of his weight class. Jose Aldo would come back the following summer. He would fight for the interim title in the division in the rematch with Frankie Edgar. He would win it. Eventually, though, he'd be upgraded to full champion when Connor beat Eddie Alvarez for the lightweight title and then walked away from the sport for a while. So we never did get that. Shame because of who Jose Aldo was and still is, right? An all-time great. If anybody deserved a rematch, it was him.
For sure.
But Connor gets to own their rivalry, that fight, that moment, and we'll never know. Neil, if that fight goes 3 minutes or 6 minutes, it might be a completely different fight. We have no idea.
You know what? When you first suggested, and I love that ad, when you first suggested it, I thought, yeah, that's a negative that we don't know. I'm actually going to flip it. I'm now going to say it's a positive because it's like lore. We'll never know. And we can all think about it and talk about it. And it's like something that can be ours forever because we will never know. I actually am going to flip that around and go, that's a positive here. That's adding to this moment. I love that suggestion. Here's the next credential. It's the comment section. Any great comments on this? We went to the old YouTube, see what people wrote. At EHS1492 wrote, YouTube made me watch a 15-second ad before this 13-second fight. Fantastic. I see the time is ticking down on us, Brian. It's almost time for America's favorite podcast segment. It's called More Important, But First. Brian, you mentioned your father. You mentioned your grandfather. You mentioned that you have children. Are you passing down your love of a violent sport to your children?
Well, Neil,
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. We don't have time for any of that bullshit. Who cares? Who cares what you're doing with your kids, Brian? It's time for something more important. Brian, I'm about to ask you a series of questions. Your answer to these questions will all be far more important than any of that bullshit you're about to start talking about your kids. Get your kids out of here. Your answers to these questions will define who you are as a man on this planet. Are you ready for more important?
Yes.
What is your favorite beverage?
I got to go with root beer.
Oh, let's go. Yeah. I mean, I love that. Robbie, yeah. Play Oh Hell Yeah right here.
Oh, oh hell yeah.
Thank you so much. What do you have a favorite root beer brand?
Dad's root beer. Doesn't have the bite like Barks, right? But just has that solid old school taste. You know?
I like Dad's over Mugs. I agree with that. I would say A&W, this isn't about me. Okay, what is your least favorite animal?
Oh, wow. I don't know if I've ever really considered that.
What is your least favorite animal?
Squirrels. Squirrels. I once had a third floor walk-up apartment, and I had an adult paper route in my early 20s to pay rent. I got back at 3 in the morning, and there was a squirrel atop my stairs, and I thought I would just take a broom and scare him away so I can go in and go to sleep. He went into fight or flight mode. He started throwing his body against the wall and shooting crap all over the place.
Unbelievable.
And he gave me this snarly look like he was going to eat me.
Yes.
And I had to go sleep in my car.
Squirrels, what a fantastic answer and story. Next question. Do you believe there was a window of time where Manny Pacquiao could have beaten Floyd Mayweather?
Oh, yes. Okay, oh, yes. Okay. I would look back and say his best chance without question was in that 2010-2011 area.
Yep.
Once he lost to Tim Bradley,
yes,
and specifically ahead of his third fight with Juan Manuel, yes, Marquez, where, as legend has it, in the locker room before walking out, Jinky confronted him about his womanizing and gambling, and that led him into a born-again Christian turn. And while I have taken the same route and stand by it, Manny didn't have that same electricity.
No one's better at picking when to fight a fighter than Floyd Mayweather. He was the
best.
He's the best at that. And fuck Manny's politics one last time. Pound for pound, who's the hardest puncher you've ever seen?
Ooh, that's a great question. I'm going to go with Francis Ngannou of the UFC,
who is going to be entering a
ridiculous boxing match with Tyson Fury coming up that I'm not sure what to do with. But I'll say this. I think the nastiest knockout in combat sports history is Francis Ngannou versus Alistair Overeem.
Yes.
It was an uppercut. I believe it was at the end of 2017, and it led to him getting his first title shot that he lost to Stipe Miocic. It's 4-ounce gloves, an uppercut from basically his kneecaps up. That is the most smash face, worst punch I've ever seen.
It's almost too much. It almost is too much. I mean, it probably is for that man, but for me as a fan watching it, it's almost too much. What is the best martial arts movie of all time?
Oh, wow. Rafe's going to kill me here. Rafe Bartholomew, if I don't hit something like Best of the Best Part 2 or something here. I don't know. I don't have a great...
Do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite martial arts movie?
I mean, I love really cheesy martial arts movies.
Yeah,
I'm such a Seagal guy, right?
Same.
And I'll go to my grave in the great debate of because, you know, look, Rafe and I once wrote a co-story for Grantland about the prime of Seagal, that his first six action movies I'll put up against anybody ever. But he loves Out for Justice, which is basically Seagal's version of Commando, and it's great. But Marked for Death is
so
the
good.
Dark action thriller classic that we all needed.
Which movie is it where he goes, anybody know who killed Bobby Lupo? And he puts the...
Yeah, that's Out for Justice. Okay, that's a great... That's,
hey, man,
you
so
know,
good.
Who's
man.
A boxer in here? Who's a boxer? You're a boxer? Okay. What's
so
a boxer? Yeah.
What's the best finishing move in professional wrestling history? I'm going to judge you here. I'm going to decide who you are and what you're about.
I got to go back to my roots. There was a badass among all badass. My favorite thing about wrestling is finding out who could really fight.
Yes.
The short answer on that is always Haku or Meng, whatever you want to call
is
him.
That
He's
true?
The guy, that Samoan guy. But Bad News Brown won a judo, I think, gold medal in the Olympics.
Is that true?
He was like in his 40s and 50s. He had the ghetto blaster, which was a reverse dropkick to the back of the head. And being a boxing fan, they always said, if you rabbit punch somebody in the back of the skull, my dad used to always tell me, you could
kill
somebody.
Him.
You could punch
right.
him in their brainstem.
You could die.
And this bald-headed African-American guy wearing one black leather glove would drop 2 feet to the back of your head and knock you face first out. I'm like, that's the nastiest move I've ever seen.
What a great answer. That could
be
the finest work on this podcast.
The ghetto blaster. That's the best name ever.
Fantastic. What a great answer. Dunks or passes?
Oh, dunks all day.
What's your favorite dunk?
It sounds cliche, and I'm not really even a Jordan guy, but the greatest dunk of all time came in the 91 playoffs when Jordan at the Garden spun baseline over to get out of a double team.
Yep.
jumped up against Patrick Ewing. They both hit the apex of their jumps, yeah. Only then Jordan found another like 4 or 5 inches and put it right in his face. I could throw the Scottie Pippen one over Ewing there as maybe the most disrespectful one of all time, but I'm a monster dunk contest historian and lover of that. And I think we all have to say that pick any of the first three dunks that Vince Carter landed in 2000, and we can look back and realize how much the game was changed overnight.
Who do you believe is the best fictional boxer you've ever seen in a movie or TV show? Who do you believe is the fighter that was the best? Is it Chong Li? Is it Chong Li from Bloodsport? No.
Oh, it could be. It really could be. I mean, that guy was absolutely vicious. I was going to go more traditional and go... I don't know. It's funny because I want to say Apollo Creed or Clubber Lang, but they both lost to this 5'6" Italian guy from Philadelphia who never blocked one punch in his life and just kept going to the body. But, I mean, Apollo Creed's modeled after Muhammad Ali, and he just looked the part as a destroyer. But if we're going to go deep into, like, martial arts death movies, I'm sure there's much better answers I should have come up with, you know?
The answer's Drago. Okay, it's not about me. It's time. You did a great job. This was a lot of fun. This episode was so much fun, and listening to you do one hell of a job, do a whale of a job, absolutely out of sight on More Important was fantastic. It is now time for the cosign. The floor is yours. The mic is yours. Brian, does this Aldo McGregor fight belong in the First Bout Hall of Fame, and why?
It does, because I think there's very few times, especially as an MMA fan, that moments happen in the UFC as the sport leader that transcend the sport, that go way beyond the fight fan, the sports fan. Ronda Rousey was a big part of that. The only moment I could say in my UFC fandom, which does go back to UFC 4 and my dad's illegal cable box and watching Keith Hackney punch Joe Son in the balls like 76 times in a row until he tapped out, was this. When Ronda Rousey got head kicked by Holly Holm, it literally felt like the world was upside down because we never thought Rousey could lose, especially not like that. But Aldo McGregor was right friggin' there. This is in the Hall of Fame because it is the most absurd moment. Still the fastest knockout in UFC title history. It's just the whole build, which took over a year in the end to get to that fight. Conor McGregor versus Habib is the most sold and most watched UFC big title fight of all time, and that had the nastiest build ever. But there was like a sport build about Aldo McGregor, a changing of the guard, a transaction that transcended sports. We talked about the McGregor magic. I don't know if we'll see something exactly like this again. UFC gives us a lot of great memories. Leon Edwards' head kick 2 years ago to win the title. We get great moments. This had everything. This is in the Hall of Fame.
I perfectly said. It's time for the induction speech. That's when I, Neil, get to decide whether this thing's going into my Hall of Fame. Listen, I don't want to wheel that around, but it is true. It's my Hall of Fame. I made the goddamn thing. Do whatever the fuck I want. Now, listen, I'm going to take everything Brian said into account. There's not much I can add past that. The only other thing I wanted to say, I read a quote from Connor on his Instagram page. After the fight, posted a picture of himself victorious. The caption reads, "To the naked eye, it was 13 seconds. But to my team and my family, it has been a lifetime of work to get to that 13 seconds.
Wow.
If you think about his entire life leading up to that moment, his entire career, his financial future, his family's well-being, his parents' well-being, the generations of his children and grandchildren who will all eat off of this guy's career. To get into that moment and to execute that well, that precisely, that accurately, I really can't wrap my head around it. It's too much to think about. The magic of it, the entertainment of it, how funny he was. Of course this thing is in the First Bell Hall of Fame. I don't think there's not really much of a debate here. I won't hear it. I won't hear any other complaints. Congratulations, Conor McGregor, Brian Campbell, Jose Aldo, Dana White, whoever else had something to do with this fight. Your moment is in the First Bell Hall of Fame. May your plaque hang on the walls forever. Oh, my God. You must be elated. You must be so. Is this the top of your career? Is this the best moment of your career so far?
This is without a doubt helping push this into induction. This is the moment I'll tell my kids about.
Ryan, how can people follow you? How can they support you? What are you working on?
Thank you. You can find me at B Campbell on Twitter X or whatever we call that that musk infused place. At Brian C. Campbell on Instagram. But really, my heart and soul gets poured into Morning Combat 3 days a week. It's Showtime Sports and CBS Sports digital show looking at preview and review and interview and everything that matters in boxing and mixed martial arts and a lot of dick jokes thrown in between. If that's your comedic flavor, Luke Thomas and myself and calling fights hopefully somewhere for Showtime as I continue to climb the ladder in my career. I'll tell you what, I've done a lot of great drugs in my life, Neil. Okay, not anymore though, but I've done a lot of great drugs. The best drug in this world is sitting ringside and calling a boxing match and lending your voice to the soundtrack.
I can't imagine. Of this.
There's nothing. There's nothing. There's not. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of sex I didn't have that could have changed my life, but there's nothing like this. Okay. You know what I mean? There's nothing like this.
Brian Campbell, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
That's it. That's the show. My thanks to Mr. Brian Campbell. Now there's a guy I think I could be friends with. Me and Brian talking sports and watching fights. Man, that would be great. Follow Brian, support that man. We're all we got. My special thanks goes to my old man. I love you, Dad. Thanks for getting me into sports and prize fighting especially. Thanks to the team, Jessica, Rob, Bob, Rhythm J, EJ, DA, David Ostramskis at Ball is Life. That's the team. The Asians outnumber the non-Asians on this show. That's important. Please rate and review us if you would. It would help the show. And please come back next week for more First Ballot.